Okay, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Hi, happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So we just started by listening to... Oh no, I wrote it down. Oh, that's gone horribly wrong. what were the two tracks you sent? I just lost the note that I'd wrote.
So I sent one called Fei Zhao.
Yes.
And then another one called L&D.
L&D. Oh, I just found it written down. I'm such an idiot. Okay. Okay. It was L&D that we played. Let's talk about that in a second. Just tell us who you are.
I play tenor saxophone and I'm originally from Perth in Scotland.
Yes.
And I moved to London in 2012. To study at Guildhall, and still living in London.
Okay, great.
North London.
So the track we heard is from your album that's coming out in December.
With my trio, which is Ferg Ireland on double bass and David Ingemels on drums.
Oh, wonderful. And where did you who's L&D?
L&D, they're actually, it's Lily and Dennis, and they're actually dogs.
Oh, great.
I used to live in Muswell Hill, and I've signed up to this website called Borrow My Doggy.
wow!
Yeah, and it's so that, so if you don't have a dog, you can, like, borrow other people's dogs.
That's great. How long did you borrow these dogs for? Like just take them for a walk or like a couple of days?
Yeah, it was just for walks. And actually, when they went on holiday, I like house sat and dog sat for them as well.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Nice. Yeah, it was really great. And it was perfect in Muswell Hill because there's so many sort of leafy bits. So it was really nice.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I'd love a dog, but it's just too much. I don't think it's... I don't know. I just can't imagine how much attention they need. So the album,
mm-hmm.
Have you got an exact release date?
December. So we're doing a tour actually as well, which is 10th till the 22nd of December. So I guess the official release date would be just before then.
Amazing.
In December. So- yeah.
So what is your debut album as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it's the first one.
Okay, great. What inspired you to want to make it?
It's kind of because I applied for the Peter Whittingham Award.
Yeah.
And then got it. So and my application said I'm gonna do an album. So and then I got the award. And then was able to actually make it. But I guess actually, so I've written some music like for my final recital at Guildhall.
Yeah.
And that was with the trio. So yeah, I'd already been playing some of the music for a little while.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd just be nice to record it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Well, what about it made you, I know this might not be the most intelligent question I've ever thought up, but I'm just, just sounds so nerdy, but I have to ask it. Why, did you ever like contemplate having a piano or a guitar or anything? Not that
not
I'm
really.
Saying you should have done, because it's wonderful without, because
yeah,
it's
not
so,
really.
So much space.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, like a big hero of mine is Sonny Rollins.
Mm.
So I guess, like, I love the sound of his trio records and stuff.
Yeah.
And also, it's just quite nice, because I hadn't really written very much before. And although it's quite hard writing for trio because you don't have chords.
Right.
But also the tunes are sort of vehicles for improvisation. So they don't have to be like huge, for me anyway, they don't have to be like huge suites of like really arranged music. So it just kind of felt a little bit less daunting to write for a smaller group.
Mm.
I guess. Yeah. And then also the Sonny Rollins thing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So how did you get into playing the saxophone when you were a kid?
So I actually started on violin because that's all that was offered at my school, my primary school. And then I think I just like heard some saxophone on a recording and then sort of begged my parents for a while. And then they eventually gave in when I was about 11.
Oh, nice. Do you know what recording it was or anything?
I do, yeah. It was actually, it's quite funny. It was actually Baker Street.
Great. What a start.
Yeah. I know. It's quite funny. But, yeah.
Awesome.
And then so I watched it. I was like, I want to play that. And then and then so I started playing, and luckily my first teacher in Perth was like really into jazz, so he sort of, you know, gave me some Parker CDs and stuff.
Oh, amazing.
And sort of got me into it. Yeah.
How long did you have to work on your parents for them to buy, did they buy you an alto to start with?
I think that's what happened. Yeah. I can't remember how long it was, because I was already playing, I was getting like piano lessons and then violin lessons at school.
Yeah.
So I think they were kind of like, oh God, you can't play three instruments. That's ridiculous. But, I can't remember how long it was.
Okay. What happened to the violin in the grand scheme of things?
Violin was swiftly forgotten about. Actually, I did sort of play them both for a little while, but then, yeah, it was just obvious that saxophone was the one.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
How many different tenor saxophones have you owned?
Just the one, actually.
Really? Your whole life? That's amazing.
Yeah, because I had an alto for a while. I've had three altos.
Right.
So I started on a student one and then got a better one, and then when I got to Guildhall they were like, you have to get like a Mark VI or something.
Yeah.
So then I got, so yeah, I've got a Mark VI alto, and then yeah, and then I just bought a tenor just because I thought it'd be useful to have.
Wow. That's amazing.
Maybe in my second year at Guildhall.
Yeah.
And then I was really lucky. I bought both my saxophones in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
So you know, got a really good price for them and stuff, and and just happened that they had exactly what I wanted.
Wow.
In the little shop. So yeah, it was great. And I got this Con tenor because I didn't want to spend loads and loads on like a second instrument. But now
I was watching I was watching a YouTube video of your trio earlier, and I noticed your like bottom This is so nerdy. I apologize already. Again, I noticed your bottom B flat, I think, was on the other side of the bell, or maybe it's only a bottom B.
Yeah, the B's on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, interesting. Must bring that up later.
Yeah, if everyone wants to hear about it, the con. I think it's 1931 con.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty old.
So why that one? What like, did you want a 30s sax?
I think so, yeah, because I mean, I knew that like vintage horns have like a really nice sound,
mm-hmm.
like Mark Sixes and stuff, but I didn't want to spend like however much.
Yeah.
How much are Mark Six tenors? Like $8,000 or something?
Yeah, they can.
Or,
they
between,
can.
Or six.
I mean,
six
I had mine
eight.
Valued. Mine's a 1958. Mark VI,
right.
Which cost $4,000 back in like 10 years ago.
Right, that's amazing.
At the time, it felt like so much money to part with.
Yeah.
But now, of course, the value. And that's the thing about whenever I sell it, I'll always kick myself that if I'd waited, it would be worth more.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
So my new plan is to just wait for it to completely break and then I'm just going to retire. Consider that a sign that it's over.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so but your saxophone sounds absolutely lovely and the way it's recorded on the album is amazing. The tone of it is just it sounds really modern though, even though it's like a 1931 saxophone.
Right, yeah, so people have told me that. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, no, it's cool though. I love it. How do you Now, here's a really annoying question. I won't linger on this for long.
Okay.
How do you feel about telling the world the mouthpiece that you're using on it?
The mouthpiece?
Not
okay.
That, I mean, I'm the only person that cares about this.
Yeah, probably. it's a Ed Pillinger mouthpiece.
Oh, cool.
I think it's based on, he's got like a bunch of mouthpieces based on like old links.
Oh, cool.
So I think it's one of those. It's a Ed Pillinger NYTHB.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But yeah, it's great. Yeah, he's like, and he's a great guy. Have you been round to his place?
No, I know nothing about him. Who is
he? Oh, okay. He lives in Stanmore.
Right.
And he makes mouthpieces.
Cool.
For a clarinet and saxophone.
Oh wow!
But, nice. But yeah, you can just like go around to his house and try them all out, and like he's really helpful and really nice.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, they're really good. Yeah.
So this is how did you then buy this tenor? What happened? The process of being like buying one because it's useful for it then becoming your like principal voice, if you like.
I think it was Sonny Rollins, actually. I started transcribing a Sonny Rollins solo on alto, I think.
Yeah.
But then a lot of it went really low.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'll just try this on the tenor. And then I was like, this is great. And sort of just played tenor more and more. And then, yeah.
Wow.
So for a while I was playing both.
Yeah.
I was playing alto and tenor. But then it just got to a point where it's like you have to pick one really.
Yeah.
Just yeah, it's a bit too much doing both of them. So
what
yeah.
What was it about it that did you in terms of trying to do both?
I think it's just like so whenever I play alto now, it feels really weird because like the sound that's coming out of the instrument isn't what you're expecting. For mm-hmm. your fingers. So I think if you want like a good relationship with your instrument, you just have to dedicate all your time into one of them.
Wow.
Because yeah, it feels really weird to, I think it just messes up your like relative pitch.
Yeah.
It's like whenever I play alto, improvising feels quite strange.
Yeah.
For a while, just because, yeah, the sound that's coming out isn't what you expect it to be.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird.
It is, absolutely. It's if you're listening and you're just a bit confused about what the hell is going on here, the alto saxophone's like a fourth higher. So you press the same fingers down and it just sounds higher. It's just a bit weird.
Yeah, same fingering. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird one. But, I mean, lots of saxophone players sort of manage to do it. don't they?
Well, I could play both, but not if it was a small group, then I couldn't. You know, like a standards gig would be curtains. I just can't remember enough tunes in the right pitch to play them on alto.
Right. Yeah, that was the other thing. I had to like, it was. I mean, it was like really good because I had to learn all the tunes in like a different key.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was. It was good practice. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed doing that on the clarinet because it sort of took away all my finger memories.
Right, yeah.
And left you only with your brain. But yeah, I just can't. I'm just too, I don't know. It's not for me. trying to play them. You're right, though. It's also nice to have. Do you only play your tenor on the album?
Yeah, just tenor. Yeah.
Okay, great. Because I was about to say, it's great to just pick one and make that choice, and I think it makes your album have a much stronger identity as well when you don't change the lineup.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I don't know, it's just for me, I much prefer albums like that, you know, you just explore the one thing really deeply.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice, especially if it's only like 40 minutes or something.
Yeah, totally.
It's kind of, it's not so long that you'll get bored of the one thing.
Anyway. That's I've got my first album coming out next summer, and
are you releasing on Ubuntu?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because I am as well.
Oh great, I wondered that when I was listening. I was listening to it thinking, man, Martin would love this. That's great. Oh brilliant, that's really cool.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, congratulations for the Kickstarter. You reached your goal and everything, didn't you?
Oh yeah, thanks. I did, and yeah, I was a bit. I kind of felt bad doing a second one because I did one the year before, for the film about Richard. But I figured I wanted to be allowed to do one selfishly once in my life, you know.
Yeah.
And also do one where I was putting in personally as much money as I was going to kickstart. That seems fair as well.
Yeah.
Still, that's a big help. So, it's 46 minutes and, I've only played the soprano saxophone. And sometimes I'd be like, man, like that is a lot of soprano. Like that's going to be, you know, that could get really rough really quick. but anyway, we'll have to, wait and see about that. So how did you come across Ubuntu to want to be released by them?
I think it's because my friend Nick Costley White has just released an album on that label, and Martin Speak as well.
Yeah.
Did
he teach you at Guildhall?
He did teach me at Guildhall, in third and fourth year.
Right.
Yep, he was a great teacher. I know Nick quite well, and obviously I know Martin well, and then I just checked out who else was on the label, and it just sounds like there are a lot of really cool people who've released with them.
Yeah.
So I thought that'd be a nice one to go with. Yeah.
Did you consider any other labels, or were you just quite happy once you'd seen, you know, the vibe and who else was on it?
Yeah, I mean, I did do a little bit of research, but then when I found Ubuntu, it just looked like the right thing.
Here's another nerdy music question for you. Did you like go on their website, find any? Like, I'm just curious because it's really there's no one way to like find a label to release your music with. It seems like it's quite a lawless, you know. Unstructured. I don't know. It's not like there's loads of like application forms you can fill out and people will sift through them. You know, it's kind of really a really interesting problem to face up to, I think, as a musician.
Yeah. I don't know. Actually, my boyfriend Sam released an album, and he did loads of. Loads of label research and sort of sent the tracks to a lot of different people. So he had a few suggestions
okay
as well, actually. Oh, cool. But the thing he found was some labels only release like 3 albums a year or something.
Yeah.
And it's all like quite planned.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So they're not really, and then they get loads, they get sent so many different albums to look at. So a lot of the time they're just like, no, we don't, it won't fit in with our schedule.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But then it seems like that's not really a problem with Ubuntu.
Yeah.
They seem to be releasing quite a lot, and I kind of wanted to get it out.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to sort of sit around for ages and not do anything. So I just kind of wanted to get it out. So it seemed like a good thing. And I met Martin, and Martin Hummel.
Yes.
Who's head of Ubuntu Music, and he seemed great and just like really. Like a huge jazz fan, like he loves it, and just like a really nice guy and really helpful.
Yeah, totally. So, I feel like he's kind of opened the floodgates for a lot of creative music at the moment.
Yeah, totally.
Which is great. You know, like you say, like it's really hard when you start looking at labels and like you start looking at the politics involved of like a release schedule and like, I don't know if you, I don't have any experience of it, but I wouldn't want to be in a situation where I'm given a date that whether I like it or not, or I'm being told like the cover's got to look like this, and you know, you don't want to.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Like Martin's really flexible and he's like totally up for you making sort of the artistic decisions and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So, the other two in your Ferg Island, I have a feeling I went to school with Ferg, you know,
oh really?
Do you know if he went to Chet's?
I don't know. I thought you went to the same school as James Madryn.
Right? Interesting.
Possibly.
Ferg's younger than me, you see. So
right.
So I blame my. Here we are, Donald Fergus Island. He's gone to great lengths to. excellent. Trying to see if he put on his profile where he went to school. Let's see. He went to, I don't know. This is going to have to be a mystery. If Ferg ever listens to this, Ferg, if you could just text me and tell me where you went to school, that would be great. Right. Oh, no. Christ Hospital in Horsham School. Right. No, I did not go to school with Ferg. I'm going to let go of that mystery right now. What I was going to ask you is how you came to pick him and Dave Ingemels to be the other two guys you wanted to play with.
Well, I actually started with Misha Milovabado on bass.
Yeah.
And he did my final recital and stuff.
Yeah.
And also Callum Gurley plays.
You guys played at Manchester Jazz Festival.
Yeah, we did that.
Beautiful. How was
that? Yeah, we did that last week. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I mean, it was quite a long day. But
you drove up and down in the same day?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, because we were playing in the afternoon. And it was really nice and like a good crowd and stuff. It seems like a really nice festival. But yeah, we just did like one set.
Yeah.
So we're in the car for most of the day.
Wow, that's a big day. But a great gig there.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
And Callum played with you guys on that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was doing that one. Yep.
Okay, so...
which was nice.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So you were saying about starting out with Misha.
Yeah, so I think Dave introduced... So me and Dave overlapped for a year at Guildhall.
Yeah.
So I got to know him at Guildhall. And then I think he just suggested having a play... with Misha, I think, and it just felt really nice, and it was it was really fun.
Yeah.
So I thought that might be a cool thing to do. So yeah, that's kind of how it started.
Okay, and then how did Ferg come into the mix?
And then it was actually like a similar thing. Like Dave introduced me to Ferg, and we had a play, and that was really good as well. Yeah, so. So yeah, so then Ferg started playing with us, which was really nice.
Oh, great!
Yeah, and then I've known Callum for quite a while.
Yeah,
from Scotland. I did this summer school in Fife, like a jazz summer school.
Yeah.
And Callum was teaching on it, actually. He was the bass tutor. So that's, I think that's where I first met him. And
oh,
then,
cool.
Yeah, and now, like, I play in his big band at the Vortex.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Really,
it's monthly. They started it almost exactly the same time that this podcast started.
Oh, right, yeah.
I think that was the first ever... the first ever time we did a jazz podcast news. That was the first thing we ever talked about.
Right. Oh, cool.
So how are those gigs?
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, they're great. I mean, I feel so lucky to be sort of in the band most of the time. Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah, it's a great band. And like some older guys who I've looked up to, you know, since I moved to London. So it's like, it's really nice to get to play with them. And Callum's music is great. Really, really fun music to play.
Is it largely original tunes that he's writing for that gig?
A lot of original tunes, and then a few Monk tunes that Callum's arranged.
Yeah.
And there's a Coltrane tune as well.
Cool.
Yeah, but yeah, a lot of original music. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's managed. He's got like a whole folder for the charts now. I don't know.
Oh wow!
How he's had the time to do that? Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
I was sitting in the Academy Cafe once with Nick Smart. Nick's the head of jazz there, and we were talking about the, because I played a lot of like Barry Sachs, and we were talking about a big band that I was doing. And he just sort of said really frankly to me, you know, Rob, you have no right to be in that band. And he was like, for the fact that you... I know how he meant it, but, you know, he was like, and the fact that you play baritone and, you know, it's helping you to kind of get into situations that you just otherwise wouldn't be in.
Oh, my God.
I was like, brilliant. I know, but he was right, to be fair. I think that was a secret message, like don't give up the baritone, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So other than Sonny Rollins, who else are you really like, you know, your absolute favorites? Who's the A-team?
The A-team. Oh wow. Oh, it's such a difficult question, isn't it?
It's horrible.
But I'll just pick some at random.
Yeah, great.
I mean, I guess some like super obvious ones like Charlie Parker.
Yeah.
John Coltrane. I'm transcribing a Stan Getz solo at the moment, actually, which is
lovely.
Great.
Which solo?
Yeah, it's really nice. There Will Never Be Another You on an album called The Steamer.
Oh, I don't think I've heard that.
James Alsop introduced me to it. It's
cool.
Really good. It's a really nice solo. So getting into that at the moment.
Yeah, I did some of his a while ago. Because it never goes up too high, or there's some bits that are kind of inconveniently fast, but it doesn't happen that often.
yeah, it's just quite nice, isn't it? It just sounds really good.
I feel like you can spend more time like looking at the harmonic, like reasoning. You know, a bit like I used to do some Mike Brecker solos, and you had to spend like a month trying to learn the lines,
just how to play it.
Yeah, exactly, and then Also, if you end up sounding too much like that, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing anyway.
Yeah. I guess not. It's not very fashionable right now, is it?
It's not very fashionable. And it's also so kind of iconic and unique that...
It's so obvious what you're doing, isn't it?
No, you're right. That's the problem. It's really... I don't know. You don't really ever want to hear that when I'm listening to someone too much of like, oh, you sound too much like this guy.
Yeah. I suppose so. I think there might be a bit of a problem with that in tenor, like modern tenor players with Mark Turner.
Ooh, maybe. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems to be the tenor sound. Or actually like Ben Wendell as well.
Yeah.
Definitely, that's the thing.
Yeah, a lot of my friends were really into Seamus Blake when I was at college.
Right, yeah.
That was like the size, like he's so loud. I remember I spoke to this American tenor player called John Arabagan came.
Yeah, I know John.
Yeah, he said amazing. Once in a class that he transcribed so much Chris Potter that he got to the point where he just sort of sound like all he could do was to sound like Chris, and he banned himself from listening to it.
Oh,
I know. It sounds like a brutal period of life to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard. It's kind of hard not to, you know, if you love it.
Yeah.
I think that's happened with a few people I know. I mean, that's kind of happened with me and Sonny Rollins, actually. I just, like, that was all I listened to.
Yeah.
It was very intense. Oh, so amazing. I'm trying to listen to some other stuff. But it was, I mean, like, you know, I think it's really good to get into one thing, actually, because you can learn a lot about them and how they play and stuff.
Yeah.
So it is good, but then, I guess it needs to come to an end at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to come to an end for your own safety.
Yeah.
So how did you decide, like, to go to become a jazz musician? Do you remember a point in your life where I was like, yes, I'm gonna do this?
I think it happened kind of gradually. So, like, when I first started playing instruments, it wasn't like I want to be a musician.
Yeah.
You know, like at 11 years old.
Yeah.
But
do you remember what you did want to be?
Not really. I was kind of into, like, maths and physics at school.
Nice.
So, and music, so obviously, but so I don't know, maybe something to do with that. But I think by the time I had to start thinking about careers and stuff, music had sort of grabbed me. So but yeah, I think one of the things was I joined the Fife Youth Jazz Orchestra.
Yeah.
Which Callum, I mean, like, a few people have been through that youth orchestra, Callum Gurley included. And it's led by this guy called Richard Michael.
Right.
Who's just, like, a fantastic person, a musician, and it's just, like, he's been running the band for, like, I don't know, I think it's like 40 years or something, or 30, like a long time.
Yeah.
And just like every week in Cowdenbeath, he's just like so enthusiastic and just has so much energy for the music, and he just absolutely loves it. So he kind of passes that on to everyone who goes through that orchestra.
Oh, great.
So I think that was a big reason that I got so into it, because I went to that orchestra once a week.
Yeah.
And then someone suggested that I do Nijos.
Yeah.
And then I met Malcolm Edmonston and Andrew Bain.
Yeah.
And they, obviously Malcolm teaches at Guildhall and is now the head of jazz at Guildhall. And I think they maybe suggested that I audition for conservatoire.
Yeah.
So, and that was a really good thing, because I got to meet people from other people who are interested in jazz from different parts of Scotland.
Yeah.
Which was really good. And some of them were already at music college. So that was really good as well. Yeah.
So did you always want to then move to London?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, I did audition at RCS in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And I know that the course there is great. And I know a lot of people on the course and who have done the course. And I know Tommy Smith really well. And I did his youth orchestra as well, which was great. And, like, he's a fantastic teacher as well.
Yeah.
And that would have been very tempting to stay in Scotland. Obviously, no fees.
Yeah. Oh, as my well, God, which of would have course. Been, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would have been, I mean, it would have been really nice. But then, it was just kind of like London is where it's all happening. And I think I was just quite up for, like, a big city after being in, so my parents live in the country.
Yeah.
In Perth.
Yeah.
In the countryside. So I think I was just quite up for being thrown into a kind of big city.
Yeah.
And just sort of be immersed in it all. Which I think was the right decision.
Yeah.
Even with the sort of, because I was really unlucky. My year was the first year of the 9 grand.
Oh, horrible.
It was quite unlucky. But, I mean, you know, everyone's in the same boat, so we've all just got this debt now.
It's a stupid idea because, I mean, I don't know many musicians who are going to earn enough money or get onto a high enough pay scale to actually pay it all back. It's probably going to create more debt than it solves.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's annoying. I mean,
yeah.
But when you coming down to study, though, is great if you want to end up, you know, living, you know, in the same city.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I've met so many people.
Yeah, exactly.
At Guildhall.
It makes life a lot easier, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are your favourite hobbies if you're not playing the saxophone?
Favourite hobbies? I like reading.
Excellent.
And
you said that as if it might not count.
Well, I mean, everyone reads, don't they? I guess.
Well, to varying degrees. What kind of things would you read?
My favourite author is Paul Auster.
I don't know anything about Paul Auster.
He's an American writer. And he writes novels. And most of them are set in New York, which is quite nice because I love that city.
Yeah.
So, just really into his writing.
Yeah.
So he's definitely my favourite. And actually, so the album that I'm releasing is named after one of his books.
Oh, brilliant.
Moon Palace. Which is a great book, yeah.
Does he know this?
No. I hope I'm allowed. Yeah. I think it's fine.
I have this problem like once a week where I'm like, uh-oh, I'm going to get sued.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure it's allowed. You know, that you can't, I mean, yeah, because that's, I mean, what inspired you to name it after that book?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the book and just, to be honest, I thought it would just be a good title because it would lend itself to some interesting artwork.
Yeah.
Actually, for the cover.
Mm.
Just got a kind of nice ring to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to throw in there besides, as well as the reading?
Oh yeah, the hobbies. I used to go running sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, I don't do that so much anymore. I did like do a little workout in my room instead.
Oh, nice.
Just keep a bit in shape. And then actually, so my flatmate's got a darts board.
Great.
So we had a period of sort of playing quite a lot of darts. which was great. I mean, we were all quite rubbish and there were quite a lot of holes in the wall, in the wall now, which I really hope doesn't affect our deposit.
Yeah, but that's what a rented place is for, in my
opinion. Yeah. So that was fun. And actually, there's a snooker club. So I live on Greenlands in Haringey.
Oh, I used to live there.
Oh, cool.
I used to live in Tottenham.
Okay.
Right behind the Greenlands.
Right. Yeah, because we're actually right next to the Salisbury, which is fab. Yeah, it's great. And there's like a snooker club nearby.
Yeah.
Which is a fun place to hang out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I think that's kind of taken the place of the darts for the moment anyway.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Great hobbies to get into.
Pub sports. Nothing too, something that you can do whilst having a pint.
Yeah, and not be exposed to any sunlight as well.
Yeah.
So if you couldn't be a saxophone player, what would you want to do for a career? Or if you went back and did it all again?
Oh man, I don't know.
Fancied a change. What do you think you'd be good at?
If I'm allowed to stay within the realms of music, I'd say
you can do
play the drums.
Oh, nice.
Because that would be really fun.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't music, then... So when I was at school, you know how I said I was like into maths and physics. Mm-hmm. And my granny knew someone that was an acoustics engineer.
Right.
So like...
For concert halls?
Yeah, exactly. So they like help build concert halls and like sort of deal with the acoustic side of things, which I think involves a lot of like physics and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think while I was at school, that was kind of, it was never really a plan, but that was like a vague sort of plan. Oh. If it didn't work out, but
that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I got really into it at any point or anything, but I just thought that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, totally. Oh, well, it's a fantasy game. So yeah, you don't have to have like got a degree or anything.
Yeah.
Oh man. So let's, you said it once already, and now I'm nervous that I've forgotten the pronunciation. Fiehau?
Oh, wow. No.
No.
Feijão?
Feijão. That was brilliant. Yeah. Oh, wow. No. Good God. Don't ever do that
sorry.
Again.
No, I mean, I had no idea how to pronounce it at first. I had to get my Portuguese friend to tell me.
Oh, well, what does it mean?
To say it properly. It just means beans.
Okay.
Yeah.
What a great name for a tune.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so like exotic, but it's not. It means beans.
All right. Well, no, that I'm so excited by this. So I'm gonna play Feijão, and good luck with your album. I know it's a few months away yet, but we'll keep a very keen eye on its appearance.
Oh, thanks.
And
you
the
too.
Tour
when
dates and everything.
When's yours out?
Mine is July 2019, the cool. month of the 50th anniversary of the space, the landing on the moon.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice
so on the opposite way to yours, mine was recorded 18 months ago. And now I'm just waiting for this opportunity to, for the clock to come around, because it just seems like a waste to do it too soon.
Yeah.
I actually recorded it like unintentionally. Just I wanted to record it and then I had it. And then when I started thinking about releasing, I realized that I was like, oh, I've got to wait 2 years. It's too good. Rather than, do it a year early and it not be the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the plan.
Great.
But yeah, that's cozy. So, we'll have to check back in and listen to some more of it when it appears.
Cool. Yeah.
That'd be really cool. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Helena, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to sit and talk.